Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And boy, we're going to be approaching mind power from a perspective that I think is absolutely wonderful. My guest today is Maureen Seberg. We're going to be talking about her book called Tasting the Universe. Now, that title may create all kinds of images in your mind, but she's going to be discussing with us today about people who see colors in words and rainbows in symphonies. And I'm quoting right from the cover of the book. Maureen, I want to welcome you to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I think that, one, you've had a very interesting life, but two, for you to take such a proactive approach to exploring an arena of sensitivity with color and sound and its effects on people, their creativity, their positions in life, I think this is just absolutely awesome.
Oh,
because everything is so integrated. I want my audience to know that you've lectured on synesthesia and spirituality at a Toward a Science of Consciousness conference at the University of Arizona, Tucson. You yourself have been evaluated for synesthesia. You have higher and lower levels. And that means that both concepts and forms appear to you in color.
Okay.
Letters are particular colors, and you have been a journalist for 20 years, which makes this book even better to read because you not only tell your personal story, but you have met some pretty famous people that have diagnosed with synesthesia. You've got articles that you've published. You're quite an accomplished young lady. Let's get down to some basics, and first, for those that have never, ever heard the term synesthesia, what is it, how did it come about, and why is it so important?
Okay, well, the short answer is it is a blending of senses. The official definition is it is a neurologically based condition in which stimulation of one sensory or cognitive pathway leads to automatic and voluntary experiences in a second sensory or cognitive pathway. In plain English.
Thank you.
If you
just great.
If you listen to music and you are a synesthete, you will hear the music just like everyone else. But you may also see it, and by seeing it, I mean in various shapes and forms of lit color that move. It's quite a show. That's often found in musicians. I have that, not as often as I'd like. The one I experience most frequently, maybe because I'm around so much text in my life as a journalist, is I have colored letters and numbers. So I know most times that letters and numbers are black ink on a white background. But they have additional auras. They have an overlay of color that might be like if you put a sheet of cellophane over a newspaper page and colored around every one of the letters. It would be something like that. And I've been this way since childhood, so most synesthetes are.
Let's talk about what you experienced in childhood. Now, you were born into a family. Your father was involved in the law. Your mother was, if I'm remembering correctly, a what I'd call a typical Irish woman, strong Catholic faith.
Yes.
And you were born into this family that had such a diversity in its own persona, number one. That's how I see it. And you were aware of all of these different things going on with you. And I find that most children are, if you give them a chance, they'll
tell
you about these things.
Yes.
Now, in your family growing up, this wasn't something that was discussed, and you just innately knew you didn't want to share this with too many people because for some reason it just didn't fit.
No, the first couple of times I brought it up to my mom, and I don't blame her because it was a wasteland of information back in the 60s. There was nothing to be found on it. But I brought it up, and my why is the sky blue question was, why is A always yellow? And she said, well, you must have memorized it that way in your classroom, thinking one of the visual aids was an mm-hmm. A in yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew I hadn't. I knew that was black on a white background above our chalkboard. And then I said, well, why, Mom, is my Friday always black and my Saturday always green? And here's an embarrassing admission, but she said, that's because of the day of the week underpants I bought you in all the colors.
Oh, moms are great, aren't we?
Moms
wonderful?
Are great. I mean, it was a great answer. It was logical, except mm-hmm. the colors didn't match
mm-hmm.
my personal colors. And so I knew something was amiss. And I brought it up a couple more times among friends and other settings, and I just knew by the way people looked at me, this was not something I should really be sharing.
You discovered a book, and I've never heard of this book. Of course, there's a lot of books I've never heard of. But
this one
is called The Man Who Tasted Shapes by mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Cytowic.
Correct.
Talk about that book. Who was he, and why did he have such an impact on you?
Oh, well, this was just the most serendipitous happening in my life, really. I was just walking through a mall one day, and I don't know what led me into this particular store, but it really did feel like a hand was pushing me from behind. And there on the front table in the store was this white book where the title of the book was in all different colors. Every letter had a different color. And I went to it immediately because I thought, what's going on here? And when I realized the title was Cross-Sensory, A Man Who Could Taste Shapes, I knew I had found the answer. And I quickly flipped to the inside jacket and realized that there was a name for what I was experiencing and walked the two steps to the register to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, we being journalists, I'm sure you can appreciate this too, Donna.
mm-hmm.
I had to speak to the author. I just had to. And I came to find out that he was this prominent neuroscientist, still living today, still working, a writer himself, who was most famous at that time for being the neuroscientist who helped White House Press Secretary James Brady during the Reagan assassination attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Quite an impressive man. But what led him to write about synesthesia, of all topics, was he was invited to a dinner party one night where the host kept going back to check the sauce that he was working on in the kitchen, tasting it and saying, it doesn't have enough points yet. And Dr. Cytowic, being the curious man he is in every setting, said, whatever do you mean by that? Do you mean the texture? And he said, no, it's a smooth sauce, but I'll know when it's ready when I taste triangles on my tongue.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. And that's all this very curious, very brilliant neuroscientist had to hear. He was off and running. And I should note that all of his peers, well, most of them, all tried to scare him away from this topic. It's too out there, it's too new age, it's not real, you'll ruin your career. And he pursued it anyway. And that's why he's so important to me, because without him, I wouldn't have a name for this, nor would thousands of people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very brave.
Well, now this brings up another point. I feel as if we are in a time flow right now that is catapulting us forward at a speed that's incredible because it is necessary for the survival of the human species and for mm-hmm. the rest of the life on this planet. That may sound very Star Wars-ish, but that's the way I feel.
No, I have a similar cosmic consciousness. I agree with you.
Yes. I think that it's imperative. So with your coming out with this book on synesthesia, and with the various children that I have had the opportunity to be engaged with, babies that I have been around, I am so aware of the fact that the sensory capabilities of these children being born today are exceptional. And with our technology, we have such a sophistication that most adults just don't, they can't be in that level of sophistication because they have been droned down in their flexibility capability, where the children have not. So when I was reading your book and I was thinking of music, I was thinking, and to me, that is a universal language. It speaks in a way that's just incredible. And your comment in the book with your research is that those people that have synesthesia, and the reality is all of us have it to one degree or another, but
yes,
some are extremely more heightened. And when you get into the creative venues, you'll find people that can be extremely good technically. I'll think of a singer. And you'll listen to that. They hit every note perfectly, and you'll say, that is the worst performance I have ever heard in my life. You will get someone else that will take that same piece of music. They may not be technically perfect, but you're in tears when they finish. Because there is this essence that comes forward. So this is just another level of what you are trying to convey in this book. And people that have this level, now you've got an upper and lower level, obviously you've been tested for this, so you're able to make that statement. But the key is here that when people are creative, this aspect of the self is at 8 times more powerful than anything else around. I mean, it's there. And that's why so often it's so difficult for creative people to be able to relate to other individuals, because some will say, oh, my goodness, you just have such a vivid imagination. It's more than imagination. But you need imagination. You have to have the passion. You have to feel. You have to see. You have to smell. You have to have this sensitivity. And I like what was said by a particular doctor. He said, the reason that this has been preserved through evolution and natural selection is because it makes some people metaphorical and link ideas and be creative. You need this whole spectrum of human diversity. And that is so true. You
Isn't
really, really need that.
That's the great neuroscientist, Dr. V.S. Ramachandran, speaking, I believe.
Yes, I believe that is the gentleman.
Yeah.
And you have a very strong feeling about this because you feel that synesthesia is being able to experience the essence of grace.
I do think so. And, you know, I'm not particularly religious, but I think we've all brushed up against that thing. You allude to it when you say, why does one performance move us to tears and another leave us cold? There's some divinity in things that can't be denied. And when it's there, it's palpable. And when you experience synesthesia, even Dr. Richard Cytoic says it in his 5 points of diagnosis, there has to be this sense of aha, a kind of an epiphanic moment. You get emotional in addition to seeing the impressions or feeling the impressions. And it feels like a religious moment. But I thought, okay, you know, someone will explain that away with brain chemicals. So let's ask theologians and let's ask quantum physicists and people with some sensitivity to what this might mean in a philosophical way. And wouldn't you know that I found out that in the Bible, in the original translation, the original Greek, when Moses ascended Sinai, it is said that as he retrieved the tablets, all gathered, all the people saw the voices. And in the Kabbalah, it continues, and all the people heard the visions. This implies there was a synesthesia present, if we are to believe that God was present on Sinai. So it seems that seemed a little bit more evidence that if you're brushing up against this divinity, you might have emotion and you might cross your senses. Things might go a little haywire on you. So I continued to ask people, and the great Lama Za Rinpoche, who practices out in Scottsdale, Arizona, he was identified by the Dalai Lama as a young man living in a refugee camp. He said, not only does he believe this is a special gift, but that it was present in all of the ancestors of Tibetans. Other researchers, the great medical anthropologist Bill Bushell of Tibet House, who writes my foreword, found an example from the 9th century of the Zen master Dogen talking about what must be present at enlightenment, and he describes synesthesia. So this is not to say all synesthetes are walking around as enlightened beings, but, I mean, we haven't done the work of, say, a Tibetan Lama or a Zen monk. But I do think we're brushing up against grace on a regular basis. And the tradition doesn't exist in the synesthesia community yet to train synesthetes. This is what I'd like to see going forward.
Mm-hmm.
If we have this ability that research now says meditation can access, there's a wonderful paper called Can Synesthesia Be Cultivated by Dr. Roger Walsh out at UC Irvine. And he found that meditators experience synesthesia increasingly the more they meditate. If you meditate some of the time, 35%, pretty regularly, 65%. If you become adept and that focused and talented, 80 to 90%. So if synesthetes are walking around in this alleged altered state already, imagine were they to become adept meditators as well. So it's sort of a cart before the horse.
It is, and there's the other side, and I'm sure that if you were to discuss it with the Dalai Lama and some of the others, they would say experiencing it is very important, but you can't stay in it. You cannot be in it consistently because life demands participation. So it's understanding how to evolve with this and to have it as a part of your life, but yet also be a contributor into this experience of life on whatever level
absolutely.
You choose to be involved with.
You know, there are the folks in India, generally men, who wander off and become sadhus, go into the wilderness, but that's not practical for most of us. And so while I have increased my frequency of meditation after learning all these things from great thinkers, I know that my role is really to be active and be a journalist and be an activist and try to get as much information out there to people
and
about this as possible.
It's like anything else, any discipline. If you're willing to develop a level of discipline, that discipline will serve you. That discipline will be there for you, but it does take practice. It does take practice. And there's so many wonderful ways through art, through touch, through interaction with people. There are so many ways to achieve this. And I think it's the multiplicity of it that could be very confusing because we in the West try to make everything left brain. It's got to follow this rule. It's got to follow this line. It's got to have this dot. And it's got to be this particular shade because if it's not that, it's not right. And that's what makes it very difficult for anyone who's doing research into the psychic area or into synesthesia, into any of these arenas. You cannot paint all people with the same brush, the same color. You cannot do it because the color can change.
Absolutely.
And the brush size can go to, you know, little tiny minuscule, little nothing but a speck to something hugely gigantic. It's very difficult.
And every synesthete and every person experiences things differently.
Right.
Like synesthetes won't have the same color for each letter or number, generally speaking. And it's interesting that you mentioned children growing up today and how advanced they seem. That reminds me of the whole indigo child movement. And there is a synesthesia story connected to that. The woman who first coined the phrase indigo child is a synesthete named Nancy Ann Tappy, who lives in San Diego. And she was able to see the auras of children coming into her practice. I believe she's a therapist. As indigo, if they were these sort of advanced old soul kids who in some scenarios might be put on Ritalin right away because they have a problem with authority and attention span and all sorts of things that otherwise signal intelligence if mm-hmm. inconvenience
right.
for some adults who don't have patience. And, well, interestingly, that happened some time ago. And then recently, Dr. Jamie Ward of the University of Sussex in England did a study and determined that synesthesia may be a form of aura seeing. Aura seeing may be a form of synesthesia.
It is.
Yes, I think you're right.
It is.
And so there are more than 50 types of this cross-sensory awareness now mm-hmm. being cataloged.
Well, I think your points are very good. It's so refreshing to me. I've been in the work of mind for so many years, and I don't know it all, but I can tell you this. With the literally tens of thousands of people that I've interacted with through media and in my own day-to-day experience and in clients that I have met through the years, it is so dynamically diversified that it would be foolish for anyone to put any kind of a category into a box of any kind. You can have certain paradigms for reference and for example, but I'll tell you, well, your book is so refreshing to me because of the various people that you interviewed and the perspectives that they have, because it enables those people that are going through certain things to realize they're not nuttier than fruitcakes. They mm-hmm. are not that way at all. In fact, use the fruitcake analogy as something that's positive because it is filled with color. It is filled with diversity. It is filled with uniqueness. It may be compact and be like a brick sometimes, depending on who's fixing it. But the truth is, you can put anything into a fruitcake.
That's right.
And
you know,
it's important to have that.
There are so many different minds, as your long and storied career has taught you. And one thing I say in the conclusion of the book is that if parents, maybe some people even listening to your show right now, suspect that their children are experiencing this, do not run to the first psychologist you find in the phone book. Many people are not up to date on the literature yet. This is all very new research, proven unequivocally by top neuroscience labs around the world and brain scans. It's not just a few doctors' theories, but we have heard cases of young people going to doctors and being told they're hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
So parents need to be very, very careful. And there are some resources listed in my book, and there are also as well online if you search for the synesthesia list and the synesthesia battery. That will lead parents of such children to safe avenues of diagnosis.
Well, one of my observations is that often these children are born into families where most of the family haven't a clue. It's as if they choose these kinds of families deliberately so that they will actually activate certain parts of themselves that otherwise, if everything was hunky-dory, it would never be activated. They wouldn't pay attention.
Yeah,
and
really
I can relate to that on a personal level because that's what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that these things occur. It happened to you. You were a reporter sitting in a courtroom
mm-hmm.
hearing a hideous, hideous case.
Yes,
about
I apologize
a
for that case.
Oh, I mean,
but
that,
I had that. But that was an epiphany right there.
That's
I just
right.
knew.
And that was a catalyst for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to read the book, folks, because this is really good. But the fact is that that was a catalyst for you. You said, I had seen so much of the dark side, I had to put myself into this situation, and I had to change it.
Yeah.
And that is often what I see occur. It happened to me, and I can look back on it. I'm going to say, how could you have been so stupid? But when you're young, you're not so smart.
No,
you really
aren't.
You're really naive,
you're
green, you're ignorant, and depending on what you've been in life, what you have been exposed to in life, you think, well, gee whiz, this is the way I'm supposed to be living. No, that's not true. And you found that out, and here you have interviewed people like Isaac Perlman, and oh, this man is marvelous, and your story about him is just incredible.
He was lovely. I wish every child had a chance to be taught by him the way he discusses in the book his children's music program. He's such a teacher.
He's fabulous. But see, that he talks about being a good teacher, and I so agree with his statements on that. But you talk about how he is highly sensitive, and that's what makes him such an awesome musician.
Oh,
because that instrument, you could have 500 people play a violin, all be perfectly fine, and nothing's there. But he puts the heart, the feeling, he lives the sound. He is seeing a story in his mind when he's playing the music, and that's what takes over.
Yes.
He's
and
powerful.
He literally sees color and shape for every note he plays on that beautiful 1714 Stradivarius of his.
Yes, and I love the jelly bean story, but I also want to cover in here, you have interviewed some very, very prominent people. Sir Robert, you'll have to tell me.
Kalau.
Kalau. I was going to put an extra I in there. So I'm glad you said it. Sir Robert Kalau. And this is the guy that initiated the Great Green Web, as you call it.
Yes.
This is incredible.
Co-inventor
it's green.
Of the Internet. Not Al Gore.
Don't forget Al Gore.
But one of the scientists at CERN, the Super Collider in Switzerland, those scientists first needed something like the web to communicate with each other about what they were doing, and then they released it to the public. That's the short version of that story, but that's essentially the truth of it. And there are a couple of wonderful stories that Sir Robert shares with me. Being in a secure passageway, some tunnel, and he had to remember the digits that went in the keypad door. And at the time, he couldn't remember, despite the fact that synesthetes are known to have good memories. And he closed his eyes and saw the colors for the associated numbers, and worked backwards and got through the door. Now, co-inventor of the Internet that he is, he left his legacy not only in helping to develop it, but in naming it. His colleague, Sir Tim Berners-Lee of Great Britain, said to him one day over a beer outside on the terrace after work at the Super Collider, I don't know, what about World Wide Web? And because Sir Robert saw those W's in dark green, his favorite color, he went with it. And believe it or not, at the first World Wide Web conference, green enamel pins were given out to celebrate the synesthesia beginnings of that name. So,
well, I'll tell you.
He's quite a remarkable man.
This is absolutely wonderful. Your book has so much substance to it, and the people that you have interviewed that have told their story so that other people can be comfortable with what maybe they're experiencing. I just think you have opened up a marvelous, marvelous aspect that is going to become more and more in the forefront. I think anybody that would read this would have an aha on their own, maybe about their own lives, but maybe someone that they love that they have a tendency to do certain things. Your book, Tasting the Universe, I know we're just about out of time here. People Who See Colors in Words and Rainbows in Symphonies. This book has so much substance to it.
If you want to
expand your mind into a different level of understanding and tipping inside yourself, this is a marvelous book to read. She has presented it in a terrific way. It involves science. It involves imagination, creativity. the names of the famous people that she has in this book, Tasting the Universe, you'll recognize. Maureen Seberg, what's your website that people can go to, please?
Oh, it's literally the title of the book, www.tastingtheuniverse.com. And people can send me mail there, and I promise to answer, and you can order the book there as well.
This is marvelous. Maureen, I wish you nothing but the best. I think that you have got so much here to share. I just hope that you'll be able to do a lot of public speaking, because I think you'll open the doors for young people as well as the older generation that maybe has felt that they couldn't speak of these things because they would be too much the odd duck of their environment.
They might feel strange without some of the role models I present, so I hope to liberate people.
I think that you're on your way to doing that.
Thank
you. This is Donna Sebo again, Maureen Seberg. Thank you very much for being my guest. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We've got some good here, including a super recipe. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I am just so pleased to have had Maureen on the show because this book, Tasting the Universe, does something that I feel is invaluable, and that is educate. What I mean by education is the fact that so many times we get caught up in labels and words and descriptions and points of information. And when we use words, we want them to become comfortable so that we can adopt them and utilize them in conversation. When it comes to anything in the area of the mind, in the psychic area, it's very important to understand one thing, and that is synesthesia, psychometry, tarot card reading, ESP on all different levels, past life stuff. All of this is connected, and we have to develop vocabulary so that we can understand and explain what we are sensing and feeling. It is so hard with words to be able to express maybe what we're experiencing to someone else. The term synesthesia is relatively new, to the attention of many people. But it's been around a long time. People go through cycles of adapting terminology, and it becomes the norm. When we have something that comes into our experience that gives a different description, it becomes a little scary to some people. They'll say, oh, no, 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 no. And that is in all levels of environment. People will say, I don't want it. That doesn't make sense to me, because they cannot grasp it. When you're in the study of the mind, the greatest gift that you're going to experience, I don't care who you are, I don't care what your level of life or experience may have been, you realize there's no limits. No one ever has all of the answers. No one ever knows everything. But we keep trying to expand what we do know. And that is why in today's world, so many established paradigms are disintegrating before our eyes. So many different attitudes, belief systems, etc., are becoming next to nothing. Now, it doesn't mean that common values of integrity and honesty and sincerity and compassion and love and joy and these things ever go away. They do not go away. But instead, there is awareness that we are not isolationists, that everything in this life is connected. So when we were talking about synesthesiology and someone having this capacity, you all have it. I have it. We all have it. But it's waking up to that. What happens when we wake up to it? We come out of our sleeping beauty coma, male or female, saying, this doesn't work. This isn't working. I can't be asleep anymore. It demands accountability. It demands responsibility. It's a fascinating effect. It is absolutely amazing how we are transformed when we wake up. And then it's sort of funny because we go, gee whiz, can't I go back to sleep? I think I'd like to do that. I don't like being awake. If I'm awake, it means I have to pay attention. That's okay. Take joy in being awake. And it can come from just certain simple patternings of being grateful for what you have. But really think about how grateful you are for what is in your life, whether it is having electricity, being able to walk, talk, breathe. If you want to feel grateful about life, walk into a hospital. I've been visiting one frequently because of a member of family. And I've observed so many things. Be grateful for who you are. And be grateful for the fact that you have the capacity to choose. Be grateful for the capacity to think, to learn, to grow, to be who you are. Life is for the living. You don't want to be a sleepwalker. You want to be alert, awake, and saying, I'm ready to go. It is an exciting thing, this experience of life. And it has a lot to offer. But you are the one that has to make the choice. And if you've cut off from your sensitive side of self, get out a box of crayons and start drawing bunnies. Whatever it takes, try something new. If you love music, enjoy it. Maybe you have the voice of a frog. Who cares? Don't croak, just hum. But listen to good music. Put into your mind and into your environment what really brings you joy, just like Maureen learned. She had put herself into an environment that was filled with so much darkness and so much ugliness, and she said, I don't need to be here. She made a choice. We all can make that choice, and that is where your power is. But you must be awake. Antipathy comes from what I call a mental sleeping pill of disassociation. Don't do it. You don't want it. Life is for living, and you've got a lot to offer. And don't think you don't count, because you do. I'm so glad you're with me today. By the way, if you want to give me a buzz, I'd be happy to chat with you. The telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm delighted to give readings to you today. And remember, all I need from you is your first name or initial. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, just sit back and relax. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask any questions that you desire. Okay, I had promised you a recipe, and chicken is one of my favorite meats. And I always am looking for something that's going to give a different twist. Well, I found a recipe that I think is great. And if you love cheese, and if you love sausage, which in the Sebo household, all of these ingredients are something that we really, really enjoy, it's a wonderful item to fix for that dinner that you would like to give yourself a little bit of an extra something with your chicken. And this is what it's going to be. So you're going to need 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter, and this should be at room temperature. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of minced shallots. Now, if shallots have a milder flavor to them, so if you don't have shallots, just use a regular onion, for heaven's sakes. But you want to mince it. You want 2 teaspoons of minced fresh thyme. And if you're out of the fresh, use the dried. We don't get too picky here in the Sebo household. We work with what we've got. 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 1 teaspoon of pepper. You're going to need 1/4 of a pound of bulk pork or chicken sausage. You can get spicy. I prefer spicy. But there are so many wonderful sausages out there that are lean and they're healthy. And if you want the old-fashioned kind that's got the real good Italian flavor, like the fennel or something like that, use whatever you like. But you're going to need about 1/4 pound of it. You're going to need about 3 ounces of Gruyere cheese. You want to cut that into 1/4-inch cubes. It comes to about 3/4 cup. I like to make it about 1 cup. Yeah, I like extra cheese. That's me. 3 to 4 baguette slices, each about 1 inch thick, and I'd say any old bread would do. The baguette has a different texture to it, so that could make a little bit of a difference for you. But you want to cut them into 1-inch cubes. You need 2 teaspoons of chopped fresh parsley, 2 teaspoons of chopped fresh parsley, and 1/2 to 1.5 cups of chicken broth. And if you want low sodium, use low sodium. Regular chicken box, whatever it is that you want to use. And, of course, you need your chicken itself. You need the whole chicken. It's going to be about 4 pounds. That's about the average size. Now, this is how simple it is. You just preheat your oven to 350 degrees. In a skillet, you're going to take 2 tablespoons of your butter, put it in that skillet that's over medium heat, and once the butter starts to foam, you want to add your shallots, your thyme, your salt and pepper. You only want to use about 1/2 teaspoon of the salt and pepper, and you cook. You want to stir it until the shallots are translucent. That takes you all of 2 minutes. And then you want to add your sausage, and you want to cook, stirring it occasionally until it's softened. And that's going to take you about 5 minutes. I'd say take it out of the casing. That's what I like to do. I like to take it out of the casing that the sausage is in and then just chop it all up. Then you put your mixture, once that's cooked, so you've got less than 10 minutes. These ingredients are all going to be nicely married together in flavor. You want to take this mixture from the pan, put it in a bowl, and then add your cheese, your bread cubes, and your parsley. And then you want to add in your broth. Now, add it in about 1/2 cup at a time, because you just want it to be moist enough to bind it all together. Remember, the juices of the chicken are going to come into this, so you don't want it swimming. You want it so that it is absorbed. And then your chicken, your whole chicken, you're going to rinse the chicken out. You're going to rub the inside and out with the remaining butter, and you want to season with the remaining 1/2 teaspoon of salt and pepper. And then you fill your cavity with your stuffing. You truss up the legs, place your bird on a rack in your roasting pan. And I'll give you a tip. In the bottom of your pan, you want to have some water. And that way, your chicken won't be smoking on you if the fat starts, and it can start to burn in the pan. I like to put aluminum foil in my pan, add maybe, dependent on the depth of the pan that I'm using for roasting a chicken, and then I'll add maybe about a half an inch to an inch of water in the bottom, and that way the juices will drop down, will not dry out in the bottom of the pan. Sometimes I've opened up the oven and all of a sudden, woohoo, could set off the alarm. So just a suggestion, and you want to roast your chicken until the juices run clear when pierced with a knife, and it's going to take about 2 hours. Then you want to transfer the chicken to the cutting board. You want to cover it with foil because you want the juices to stay in the chicken, and then let it stand for about 10 to 15 minutes before carving. Now, if your chicken is starting to get a little too brown, you say, uh-oh, it's really going to look sort of charcoal-y by the time it comes out, then just put a piece of foil over the top of it, and that'll insulate the chicken from getting brown, not unlike when you're fixing a turkey, but this is wonderful, and the flavors are fabulous. And you got your stuffing, you've got your chicken, and serve with a wonderful vegetable of your preference and or a salad and some hot, toastily baked bread with butter. Oh, my goodness, you have got a fabulous, fabulous meal. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break for a moment. We'll be back. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I love kids. I think that they have a way of evaluating things in a very special way. And I came across this one, and this is a cute story, and I wanted to share it with you. There was a question on a second grade math quiz. Tony drank 1/6 of a glass of juice. Emily drank 1/4 of a glass of juice. Emily drank more. Explain. Well, Joanne Millington's grandson really came up with an answer that impressed his teacher. He said, she was more thirsty. I mean, these are kids. I mean, this is just how they think. It wasn't anything to do with the math. It's just, well, she was thirstier. There's no big deal. Anyway, it just shows you have to be clear when you're dealing with kids. You have to make sure that you say to them exactly what it is that you want, because they can create some very interesting answers. Let me tell you who we've got coming up next week. This is going to be a powerful coming week. We have got some absolutely amazing authors and stories. On Monday, we're going to be talking about Fit Soul, Fit Body. Brant Secunda and Mark Allen are two gentlemen that have got some perspectives regarding keeping oneself in the best condition possible on, well, let's see, in the mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional level that I think you will find most intriguing. Then Ken Stoller, Life After Life. This is on Tuesday. Ken has just done something incredible. He lost a son. The son was killed in an accident that almost devastated him. But his son came back and visited him from the other side and said, Dad, I want you to write my story. And that's what this book is about, Life After Life. I think you will find it just as interesting as I did. Music. Filippo Francini is going to be my guest next Wednesday. Magic and Grace is his CD. The music is phenomenal. We'll be discussing all kinds of things with him. And then Courage Companion, Living Your Life with True Power, Mary Beth Sammons. This book is marvelous. And then Moneylicious, Ornelia Groves, is going to be my guest a week from today. We're going to be talking about a subject we all have an interest in, and that is money, 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 and how we can work with it so it is going to be understood better. She addressed this towards more of the younger generation, but let me tell you, it works for all of us. Anyway, we've got a wonderful lineup of people. The listing for guests for this month are all going to be right up there on bbsradio.com. So just go into the Donna Sebo Show as you have today. Check out show information. You'll find all of the details regarding the upcoming guests right there for your review. So I hope you'll share it with your friends. And just know that if you miss a show, you always can go in and visit the archives. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-815-9756. Pests. Oh, my goodness. I was in a bathroom here at home, and I see this little creature crawling up a wall, and I go, a bug, zap. Beetles, all kinds of insects. I mean, they outnumber us by the gazillions, and there's so much that we don't know about them. But they all have a purpose. And they all are here in this world, living in their world to the best of their capacity. And, of course, when they invade ours, we get very, very uncomfortable. That's why exterminators do such a good business. Well, you need to really understand that a lot of these critters are not going to cause any harm to you. But if they're the wrong critters, they can eat the wood in your home like termites. They can destroy the foundation of a home, or they can actually cause a lot of challenges. For example, bed bugs. Those have become very prominent in media's information output over the past year or so because there has been a tremendous invasion of them. I have a friend. They literally disinfected and fumigated their whole house because a bed bug, one that they saw, was in their son's bedroom. And the only thing they could figure out is because he has a whole bunch of friends that come in, that one of the kids, it piggybacked on them and came into the house because they've never had a problem like this before. And they were advised that they had to go in and clean everything and check everything out, and that is what they have done. So they said, we didn't want to be invaded by bed bugs. Now, bed bugs are pretty small. They're the size of apple seeds. And unless you see one crawling around, you're not even going to know that it's in your house. You're just not even going to know there. But the thing is that they like having babies, so pretty soon they sort of invade. Well, there are a lot of different places where they can harbor. And my friends found the bed bug in their son's, as I said, their son's bedroom, and it was up on the drapes. So you can, if you want to check your own place, and I don't think you need to be paranoid about this, but you can look along mattress seams, ruffles, your headboard, the bed frame, walls, baseboards, etc. They leave dots and rusty reddish stains wherever they go. And then there are some of them that really like hotel rooms, and they like to really visit those people that are there for their temporary resting spot. And what you need to do is you need to be sure that when you're traveling, and this is an advisory that's been given out, you might want to have Ziploc bags, put your clothes inside of Ziploc bags so that the bugs won't crawl into them, and put it inside a suitcase. But they say, you know, people have been leaving their suitcases when they get home. Of course, this is during the winter months. They left their suitcases outside because then the bugs would freeze to death. Well, I know we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you for joining me. Have a fabulous weekend. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous weekend. Be back with you same time, same place, right here at BBS on Monday. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show.
If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.